Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
Welcome to Southern Sense, which is common sense, and we won't tolerate any nonsense. So tune in and stand by.
Good afternoon to another Tweaked Tuesday here on Southern Sense. I'm your host, Ann Ubellis, on this rainy, nasty July 26th here in South Carolina. Just to give you a little heads up, if you do not see the on-air, it means I was having to end the show early. I'm somewhat underneath the weather today. I'm sure you can hear it in my voice. I'm going to play a little clip here. We're going to be talking about the budget and the economy, and this is the whole headlines that we're going to be all talking about this week as we do the budget debate. And here's a rather amusing explanation of quantitative easing.
Did you hear about the Fed?
No. What about the Fed?
They announced another round of the quantitative easing.
What does that mean?
It means they are going to make large asset purchases via PAMO.
What does that mean?
It means they are going to expand their balance sheet and buy treasuries.
What does that mean?
It means they are going to print a ton of money.
So why do they call it the quantitative easing? Why don't they just call it the printing money?
Because the printing money is the last refuge of failed economic empires and banana republics, and the Fed doesn't want to admit this is their only idea.
So why do they want to print the money?
Because they say we have the deflation, and the deflation is very bad.
What is the deflation?
The deflation is when prices of the things we buy go down.
Isn't that good? Doesn't it mean the people can buy more of the stuff?
Yes, but the Fed said this is bad, especially during the recession.
So they think that during the recession, when the people have less money to buy the stuff, it is bad that the prices go down?
Yes, the Fed would rather have the inflation.
So why does the Fed think we have the deflation?
Because the CPI said so.
But aren't the food prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the gas prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the health care costs higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't tuition prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the taxes higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the subway fares higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the stock prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
Aren't the bond prices higher than a year ago?
Yes.
So what is deflating right now?
The only thing deflating that I can see is the Fed's credibility.
Did they have a lot of credibility to start with?
No.
Why not?
Because the Fed has been wrong about every major economic development in the past 20 years.
You mean they didn't see the internet stock bubble?
No. In fact, they helped fuel the internet stock bubble.
And they didn't see the housing bubble?
No, in fact, they helped cause the housing bubble.
And they didn't see the subprime crisis?
No, in fact, they told us subprime problems were contained right before the shit hit the fan and the Lehman went bankrupt.
So has the Fed ever been right about anything?
Let me see if I can think of anything. Nope, nothing.
Who runs the Fed?
The Fed is run by the Ben Bernanke.
Does the Ben Bernanke have a lot of business experience?
No, the Ben Bernanke has no business experience.
Does the Ben Bernanke have a lot of policy experience?
No, the Ben Bernanke has no policy experience.
Has the Ben Bernanke ever run in an election?
No, the Ben Bernanke has never run in an election.
So what qualifies him to run the Fed?
I don't know, maybe the fact that he has a nice beard.
But my plumber also has a nice beard, and I would not trust him to play God with the economy.
No, although when you call the plumber to fix something that is broken, they usually fix it, not break it more.
This is true, the plumber is clearly smarter than the Ben Bernanke.
Well, that is why he became a plumber, and not an economist.
How does the Fed execute the quantitative easing?
They print the money, and then they buy the Treasury bonds.
Do they buy the Treasury bonds from the Treasury Department?
No, they buy the Treasury bonds from the Goldman Sachs.
You must be shitting me.
No.
So let me get this straight. If I want to buy the Treasury bonds with my money, I can buy them directly from the Treasury.
Yes.
And if you want to buy the Treasury bonds with your money, you can buy them from the Treasury.
Right.
But if the Ben Bernanke wants to buy the Treasury bonds using the American people's money, he does not buy them from the Treasury, he buys them from the Goldman Sachs?
Exactly.
And does the Goldman Sachs give him a good price?
Of course not, they are the Goldman Sachs, they make their living ripping off the American people.
But how is the Goldman Sachs able to do this?
The Fed announces what it is going to buy, and when it is going to buy, before it does the trade.
So the Goldman Sachs can front-run the Fed, and give them the worst possible price on the Treasury bonds?
Yes, exactly.
And the Fed is okay with this blatant theft from the American people?
Of course, otherwise, the Fed would just buy the Treasury bonds directly from the Treasury Department.
Who inside the Fed is responsible for the buying of the Treasury bonds?
The buying of the Treasury bonds is conducted by the New York branch of the Federal Reserve.
And who is in charge of the New York branch?
The head of the New York branch is the William Dudley.
And what did the William Dudley do before running the New York Fed?
Before running the New York Fed, the William Dudley was a partner at the Goldman Sachs.
So the guy in charge of the American people's money when dealing with the Goldman Sachs used to be a partner at the Goldman Sachs?
Yes.
And nobody has a problem with this?
Apparently not.
Is this an episode of The Twilight Zone?
I don't think so.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
So what you are telling me is that the Fed thinks prices are going down, when in fact they are going up?
Yeah.
And they think during the recession, with the high unemployment, it is better if the thing people need to buy cost more money.
Correct. According to the Ben Bernanke, the inflation will create the jobs and improve the housing market.
Has this ever been tried before?
Yes, just last year the Fed tried the quantitative easing with $2 trillion.
Did that create the jobs?
No.
Did it help the housing market?
Not at all.
Did it help anybody at all?
Yes, it helped the Goldman Sachs.
How much of the money are they printing now?
$600 billion.
So even though the first $2 trillion did not create the jobs or improve the housing market, the Fed decided to do another $600 billion anyway?
Yes.
Who put the Ben Bernanke in charge?
The Ben Bernanke was first appointed by the President Bush, then he was reappointed by the President Obama.
But wasn't the President Obama supposed to bring the change?
Yes.
How is putting in charge the same fool, who has been wrong about everything, the change?
Well, under the President Bush, the Ben Bernanke only blew up the American economy. Under the President Obama, he is working on blowing up the entire global economy.
That does not sound like the change we can believe in.
Definitely not.
Who else supports the Ben Bernanke?
Most economists around the world think the quantitative easing is very dangerous.
Does anyone think it is a good idea?
Yes, the people at the Goldman Sachs.
Is this some kind of nightmare?
No, it is very real.
I want to bang my head against the wall.
You should not do that.
Why not?
Because the healthcare is too expensive.
But didn't the President Obama fix that?
No, but that is the subject of a whole other video. Goodbye.
That is a very, very amusing little audio tape on quantitative easing. You're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open. I want to welcome Tesla to the chat room. Our call-in guest line is 917-889-3675. And I do have to apologize. I'm a little under the weather today. My blood pressure went through the roof, and it's made me nauseous and dizzy, so I'm trying to hold on as well as I can. But if you don't see the on-air, it means that I had to leave early. I do hope you do listen to the recording if you do not see the on-air. We're going to be talking about a history of the national debt and how we ended up getting into the situation. And as of a few moments ago, I was listening to Fox News. They were saying that there may be some sort of an agreement. I don't know if there's going to be a new agreement on this debt or not. Everything changes minute to minute. There is an interesting article written by Reverend Rankin, and he made a suggestion that there is an easy way to settle this impasse, and he's suggesting that congressional Republicans agree to a 13-week clean extension of the debt ceiling, provided President Obama agrees to participate in a September debate at the U.S. Capitol about the size and nature of government. And he writes that the process of this debate involves four simple elements. Number one, the question is, should the size of government be cut drastically? If so, how so? If not, why not? Number two, Mr. Obama will prepare an 800-word statement published ahead of time where he addresses the question however he pleases. He will select two fellow advocates to do the same. Three members, Number three, three members chosen by the Republican caucus will do so also. And then number four, he says, with a chosen moderator in place, the six statements will begin with Mr. Obama and be followed with free-flowing questions and dialogue between the participants, and then the rest of Congress will be invited to pose questions of any and all of their participants. Very interesting, forcing him to bring his ideas onto the floor of Congress and have an open debate. And the only reason why they'll allow the extension is that Mr. Obama promises to do this debate. Very interesting way to try to solve the impasse. But I don't know how well that will work. There's going to be a lot of catfighting, I think. But it seems very, very obvious that the American people do want something done, because the phones in D.C. have been going off the ringing off the hook. People have been calling to protest against the Senate not voting on the cut, cap, and balance. They've been calling those who voted against it. I'm sure they're calling the White House. Websites in Congress have been crashing because of so many people hitting it. And this is American democracy at work, truly. This is an uprising. And I'm going to play a little clip of Muse Uprising. I love this song. This is the American people, what we're doing right now. Okay, that was Muse Uprising, and that's for all those very patriotic Americans over the last 24 hours that have been calling Congress and the White House and bringing down their phone system, telling them to get this cut, cap, and balance passed. It's absolutely embarrassing the way Harry Reid treated this bill in the Senate. The audacity is phenomenal, but hey, this is the same team that turned around and said, we got to pass the health bill so we can find out what's in it. I think they'd rather have us pass Harry Reid's proposal on the budget so that we can find out what's in it. And oh, boy, will we be in trouble. You know, people have asked us, what's the history of the national debt? And you have to go back to the Revolutionary War. And our dear friend Alexander Hamilton, who was the first Secretary of Treasury, and he's the one that convinced our founders to create a central banking system, which was to allow us to borrow money to pay off our Revolutionary War debt. And then we got in deeper with the War of 1812. And actually, if you look at how much money that we have been borrowing, since 1791, our debt back then was $75.4 million. That was the first year of the U.S. debt. The only time the debt went below $1 million was in 1835, where it dropped down to $33,700. And the debt was actually worked down. It's the only time. In 2010, we were at 12.5. We are now at 14.5, $2 trillion added to the national debt in 1 year under the Obama administration. That's a total of, since Bush left office, $4.5 trillion, almost half the total amount of our debt in 2008. 2008, we were at $10 trillion. We have now come almost to halfway of that. That's amazing. You actually double the debt at this point. Well, with the National Bank creation under Alexander Hamilton, there was a lot of problems. First, they modeled it off of the British system, and they did this by having foreign investors who shared in the profits. And this caused a situation where it was a lot of corruption, a heck of a lot of corruption. And it, on top of which, at the central banking system back in 1791 to 1836, was not solely responsible for the printing of the currency. Only 20% of the currency was being printed by the central banking system at that time. The rest was by the individual states, by the banks themselves, and this caused conflict. You know, face values of the bills were being inflated, and the banks weren't able to keep up with this. It caused an alarming amount of foreign influence and fictitious credit. Does this sound familiar? Does this sound completely familiar to what's going on now with our Federal Reserve System currently? Well, 1836, it ended up being dissolved. We went then into a second bank. At this point, the states were competing directly against the federal government in creating these banks and the currency. And this ended up calling after the second bank was formed, and the states and the banks were federal banks were competing to get their money out there to get people to use their currency. The second bank collapses, and it caused a free banking era. And this was caused by the Michigan Act of 1837, which allowed the automatic chartering without the consent of the state legislatures. So we went from 24 state banks to 712 banks, and this caused another crisis. The average life of banks was only 5 years of these state banks. They only lasted 5 years. Half of them failed. One-third went out of business because they couldn't meet their obligations. The value of the notes was less than the face value. So here you have the federal currency being inflated to compete directly against a state currency that was being deflated. So if you had a bill that was $1, you may get 50 cents on it. But even then, the state banks couldn't keep up with those obligations. They couldn't redeem their own notes. Creditors had to call in loans early, causing a tremendous, tremendous amount of depression, inflation. And now The free banking era led us to the National Banking Act of 1863, and this came about to help the Union fund the Civil War. You know, our federal government, since its onset, could not handle banking, and now they're trying to handle it with this new crap they're pulling here. This is what you want to do. Just scream. Just scream. Now, our call-in line is open. If anyone would like to call in and talk about the budget, what's going on today in the news, please give a shout at 917-889-3675. You're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I see Jim is in the chat room as well as Team T. Good afternoon. Please join us in the chat room. And I do apologize if I don't seem like my normal cheery self. Just came in a little under the weather today. Just having a little problem with my blood pressure. It's leaving me a little nauseous and lightheaded. So if I seem a little confused, it's probably because I'm having one of those CRS moments. So please join us in the chat room or give us a shout out and give a call in. We're talking about the National Banking Act of 1863, which provided loans for the unions in the Civil War. A little sip of water there. Now, this did several different things. The four main things it did, it created a system of national banks once again. It also created a uniform currency rather than states issuing currency and the feds issuing currency. Only the federal government at this point would issue currency. And then it required all national banks to accept each other's currency at par value. And then it required the national banks to back the notes with Treasury securities. The state bank currency still existed, but it led to Gershom's Law. And I don't know how many people know what Gershom's Law is. Well, let me see if I got – where'd my little notes go? Just bear with me. Like I said, Gershom's Law is where good money follows bad. That's what the law is, and this is what it caused. And when the Treasury value fluxed, banks had to recall loans to survive. Then rural banks with deposits in larger banks, what happened was because they were rural, their banking season wasn't the same as it was in cities because you had farmers and so on and so forth. And they would have large amount of money on deposit, but that money would be drawn down when they needed to go out and purchase their seeds for planting season. And this caused a run on banks. Rural banks with deposits in larger banks varied, like I said, at planting season. And then the demand on big banks was too large. It ended up having a liquidity crisis. This caused bank runs. It caused another disruption and depression. And it led to the panic of 1907. And here is where the Federal Reserve Bank was created. They're all led up to the Federal Reserve at this point. But it was the idea of it was created, not the bank yet itself. It would take a little bit more time before we get the actual Federal Reserve. The idea was to create a federal bank, a financial stability in case of war or major capital improvement projects. The problem is we kept on spending. We kept on spending like crazy. And I'm looking for, here we go. Just bear with me at this point. Okay, I have little notes here all over the place. One of the main responsibilities of our government is to protect our wealth and let the citizens prosper under free enterprise and economic system. But it's ironic that most of our representatives in government never owned or operated a business. You just think about that. Here they are telling us how to balance a budget when they never even had to work with a budget. Oh, well. From a political point of view, the economy and voters benefit from deficit spending for a shorter period of time, and politicians are not understanding that. They are not understanding that in the least bit. I'm just trying to find where in my notes. Well, if this deficit keeps on increasing, it's going to increase the percentage of interest, plus the already massive debt will only suppress our government and economy to force the debt to stay within a reasonable limit. And this is what we're fighting for, the cap and balance. And in a business world, you and I know it's impossible to operate and stay in business by continually borrowing to stay afloat. And unfortunately, Mr. Obama and Mr. Reed do not understand that. You're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ann Ubellis, and I apologize if I don't seem like my normal self, but I'm feeling a little under the weather. Please feel free to call in. Our guest line is 917-889-3675. I'm going to play the piece from John Boehner last night where he was talking about cut, cap, and balance. And it's only about 5 minutes, so bear with it. And I think he explained the position on it quite clearly and concisely.
I'm John Boehner. I serve as Speaker of the whole House, of the members of both parties that you elect. These are difficult times in the life of our nation. Millions are looking for work and have been for some time. And the spending binge going on in Washington is a big part of the reason why. Before I served in Congress, I ran a small business in Ohio. I was amazed at how different Washington, D.C. operated than every other business in America, where most American businesses make the hard choices to pay their bills and live within their means. In Washington, more spending and more debt is business as usual. Well, I've got news for Washington. Those days are over. President Obama came to Congress in January and requested business as usual. He had another routine increase in the national debt, but we in the House said, not so fast. Here was a president asking for the largest debt increase in American history on the heels of the largest spending binge in American history. And here's what we got for that massive spending binge. A new health care bill that most Americans never asked for. A stimulus bill that was more effective in producing material for late-night comedians than it was in producing jobs. And a national debt that has gotten so out of hand, it sparked a crisis without precedent in my lifetime or yours. The United States cannot default on its debt obligations. The jobs and savings of too many Americans are at stake. What we told the president in January was this, that the American people will not accept an increase in the debt limit without significant spending cuts and reforms. And over the last 6 months, we've done our best to convince the president to partner with us to do something dramatic of our country, something that will boost confidence in our economy, renew a measure of faith in our government, and help small businesses get back on track. Last week, the House passed such a plan, and with bipartisan support. It's called the Cut, Cap, and Balance Act. It cuts and caps government spending and paves the way for a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, which we believe is the best way to stop Washington from spending money that it doesn't have. Before we even passed the bill in the House, the President said he would veto it. I want you to know I made a sincere effort to work with the president to identify a path forward that would implement the principles of cut, cap, and balance in a manner that could secure bipartisan support and be signed into law. And I'll tell you, I gave it my all. Unfortunately, the president would not take yes for an answer. Even when we thought we might be close on an agreement, the president's demands changed. The president has often said we need a balanced approach, which in Washington means we spend more, and you pay more. Having run a small business, I know those tax increases will destroy jobs. The president is adamant that we cannot make fundamental changes to our entitlement programs. As a father of two daughters, I know these programs won't be there for them and their kids unless significant action is taken now. And the sad truth is that the president wanted a blank check 6 months ago, and he wants a blank check today. This is just not going to happen. You see, there's no stalemate here in Congress. The House passed a bill to raise the debt limit with bipartisan support. And this week, while the Senate is struggling to pass a bill filled with phony accounting and Washington gimmicks, we're going to pass another bill, one that was developed with the support of the bipartisan leadership of the U.S. Senate. Obviously, I expect that bill can and will pass the Senate and be sent to the President for a signature. And if the President signs it, the crisis atmosphere that he has created will simply disappear. The debt limit will be raised to $1 trillion, and a serious bipartisan committee of the Congress will begin the hard but necessary work of dealing with the tough challenges our nation faces. The individuals doing this work will not be outsiders, but elected representatives of the people doing the job they were elected to do as outlined in the Constitution. Those decisions should be made based on how they're going to affect people who are struggling to get a job, not how they will affect some politician's chances of getting reelected. This debate isn't about President Obama and House Republicans. It isn't about Congress and the White House. It's about what's standing between the American people and the future we seek for ourselves and our families. You know, I've always believed the bigger the government, the smaller the people. And right now, we've got a government so big and so expensive, it's sapping the drive out of our people and keeping our economy from running at full capacity. The solution to this crisis is not complicated. If you're spending more money than you're taking in, you need to spend less of it. There's no symptom of big government more menacing than our debt. Break its grip, and we begin to liberate our economy and our future. We're up to the task, and I hope President Obama will join us in this work. God bless you and your family, and God bless the United States of America.
Okay, that was John Boehner last night on his announcement when talks were breaking down on why they want the Senate to bring back cut, cap, and balance for a vote. And I'm finding, just posted up on Fox, their political blog, by Chad Pengram, Kathy Morris Rogers, a Republican out of Washington, is bringing back the balanced budget amendment to be voted on just the balanced budget amendment, not cut, cap, and balance. So they're trying to resurrect this again and bring it back up on the House floor for another vote to see if they can get it passed and send it on to the Senate. Now, notice the biggest problem that we're having between Obama and the Republicans in the House is paying down the national debt, and something President Obama does not seem willing to do. Since 1950, no Congress or president has paid a single dollar to reducing the national debt. Not one single dollar since 1950 has been applied to reducing the national debt. Principle, not the interest, the principle. You know, with raising the debt ceiling without paying down the debt, this will cause bigger interest payments. Now, with larger interest payments, this is going to be compounded with a lower credit rating. This has already happened. Already, EGAN is a credit rating agency, has already downgraded us from number one to two. So we've already had one credit rating agency the other day do this. This is a couple of days back. So now Moody's is going to follow and so on and so forth. So our interest payment is going to increase no matter what. All right, so now we're going to have higher interest rates on those larger interest payments. And as this thing keeps going, it's going to continue to balloon and balloon and balloon. It's absolutely out of control. And I see Jim is putting up the board of directors on, what is this, Jim? What have you sent me? The Obama Super Committee? Okay, this is the board startup super committee. Okay. Jim has been talking about a super committee, and he put up the membership of it so people can take a look on it. He's got a link up in the chat room. Oh, man. Now, talking about not paying down the principal, what its problem is, and this is why we have to cut the debt. You know, we understand, you and I understand free enterprise. For some reason, our government is not understanding free enterprise. Excuse me. I apologize on that. Most of our elected officials, like we said, have never operated a business. They've only been in business to get elected. And this is the perfect reason for term limits. And I see Gerald has entered the chat room also. Want to welcome everyone into the chat room, our guests also. And I do apologize if I seem a little out of it today. I'm not feeling exactly all that well. Our call-in line is open, and I welcome you to call in and have your say. It's 917-889-3675. You know, we really do have to look at some of the things that we have in here that make up the true debt. And at the time, at this, as of this morning, The debt was at $14.5 trillion and increasing at a rate of almost $4 billion a day. It's out of control. And the higher the amount of debt, the higher the interest payment, interest alone payment. And the higher that interest alone payment goes, the lower our credit rating goes, the higher the interest on that interest payment goes. And it's a catch-22. It just keeps going on and on and on and on and on until there's no end in sight. It's how else, what would happen in your household if you ended up doing that? You know, can you exist that way? No, you cannot exist that doing that in your own house. How could you expect our government to operate in this way? You know, Washington is burning, and I'm going to play a little Don Fortney here. Washington is burning. And I also want to welcome Gerald into the team, into the chat room here. He's put up the link to the Freedom Alliance shows that are on BTR, so feel free to click on that and visit the other BTR shows. Gerald, who is GGT183, has his own show, so I welcome you to join him later on this evening. In the interim, this is little Don Fortney. Washington is burning.
Let's all send a pink slip to your congressman and give your senator a 2-week notice in the mail. Washington is burning, its walls are tumbling down. The economy is in the toilet and a Senate seat's for sale. I think the country is going straight to hell. They'll tax the middle class into the poorhouse and promise better days ahead to come. Let's send all the politicians to the big house and rid the country of elected deaf and dumb. Perhaps the country won't be going straight to hell. So get angry when you learn they lie and cheat you all the time, and get real pissed off when nothing's going well. Send their mortgages to China, now that's a good idea. Medicare is dying, Social Security as well. I think the country is going straight to hell. Yes, they'll tax the middle class into the poorhouse and promise better days ahead to come. Let's send all the politicians to the big house, rid the country of elected deaf and dumb. Perhaps the country won't be going straight to hell. Hearts go out to the vast undocumented aliens, and if you see one, why, you're not supposed to tell. They sneak in after dark and take the jobs that we won't do. Congress worked all weekend to give them amnesty as well. I think the country is going straight to hell. Now they'll tax the middle class into the poorhouse and promise better days ahead to come. Let's send all the politicians to the big house, rid the country of elected deaf and dumb. Perhaps the country won't be going straight to hell.
That was Don Fortney, and he's got his album up on the internet that you can purchase. I think it's only $10 or $12. Just go to teapartymusic.webs.com. And Don Fortney was a guest on our show previously. His songs are absolutely fantastic. I've been playing a couple of them all along. So you're welcome here to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. And I do apologize to GGT183, Jermaine. I'm sorry I called you Gerald. still love you, baby. Want to welcome Mary also into the chat room. Hello, everyone, and good afternoon. Our call-in line is open at 917-889-3675. And I do apologize. I am just a little under the weather, and I'm trying to do the best I can. But we'll muddle through it, and we'll get through the day, and I hope you're enjoying the show. Talking about where the true debt is, there's part of the debt is in, followed in teeth in backwards. I do apologize. excuse me. We have the debt is boy, I just lost my train of thought. Wanted to talk about the investment funds that is helping to fund part of the debt. There are U.S. government funds. Each fund has over $100 billion invested in the national debt. So these are monies that are government funds that have been taken out and used to supplement the national debt. You've got the Civil Service Retirement Fund, the Department of Defense Military Retirement Fund, the Department of Defense Medicare Eligible Retiree Fund, the Federal Disability Insurance Trust Fund, the Federal Hospital Insurance Trust Fund, the Federal Old Age and Survivors Interest Trust Fund, and the Federal Supplemental Medical Insurance Trust Fund. And there's other, like, there are 70 other smaller investment funds that have invested into our national debt. So our national debt includes borrowing from government programs of over, as of 2009, over $55 trillion they borrowed against these funds. Now, this is your taxpayer money that's been put aside for the Civil Service Retirement Fund, for the Military Retirement Fund, and Medicare, and disability, and hospital insurance, and old age and survivor insurance, and supplementary medical insurance, and so forth, and 70-odd other ones. As of January 1st of this year, our true debt, if you include what was borrowed against these investment funds, is not $14.5 trillion. The debt is actually closer to over $60 trillion. Think about that. They're talking about a 14.5 debt ceiling, but when you add in the borrowing they did against these other funds, it's over $60 trillion. Government is obligated to fulfill three major programs in Medicare, and that's the hospital insurance, outpatient, and prescription drugs. That equals $36 trillion. As of January 1st, $55 trillion equates to approximately $180,000 per man, woman, and child in the United States. Your obligation to the national debt, your personal obligation is $180,000. That comes up to $500,000 per family. But this debt here, the $60 trillion I'm talking about, does not include operating expenses for city, state, and federal levels. It's absolutely outrageous. They're calling for $14.5 trillion. That's what they're saying is the debt? No. $60 trillion is what the debt is. And they want to raise the debt ceiling on the 14.5 obligation they're talking to you about, another $2 trillion. This is a Ponzi scheme. This is Bernie Madoff going amok, absolutely amok. It's all the more reason why we must demand that the principal of this debt be paid down. This is one of the reasons why the phones are ringing off the hook in Congress and at the White House. This is why Congress is finding their websites being crashed because so many people are going on there attempting to contact their elected officials. And a huge Ponzi scheme. Well, we've got the chat room going nice and fun. I want to welcome everyone to it. Please join us in the chat room. We've got Mary and Jim from Jim Jan Radio. We had Jermaine until I chased him off by calling Gerald, who I apologize. We've got Tesla, who's joined us, and Conservative TNT. Our call-in line is open, and I welcome you to call. It's 889-3675. What I want to talk to you about is, you know, now we know the true debt is $60 trillion. Got to ask yourself, who actually owns this debt? And where are my notes? Where's my stats here? Okay, here we go. Who owns the debt? We have public debt held by the public. This was as of July 21. Debt held by the public is $9.7 trillion. We've got intergovernmental holdings. This is what I was talking to you about, these funds. $4.6 trillion. So total public debt outstanding, they have at $14.5 trillion. Top holders, China, owns approximately, mainland China owns approximately one-fourth of our debt. As of July 2010, ooh, this is last year's numbers. Well, as of last year, they owned one-quarter of our debt. Japan coming in second with the United Kingdom, followed by Brazil, Taiwan. You got Hong Kong, Russia, Canada, who owns a substantial amount of it. And I don't think China is exactly our friend. And I don't think Russia is exactly our friend, but they are the ones that are holding a large, substantial amount of the debt. People that have stake in the debt are investors, and they come in three categories: U.S. government intergovernment debt. The second is U.S. publicly held debt, which is I was telling you about. That was the $14.5 trillion they're talking about. Then you have foreign publicly held debt. Now, investors hold the debt by purchasing treasury bills, notes, and bonds. And then, of course, we played that bit earlier about quantitative easing and about Geithner buying our treasury bonds back from the bank, from Goldman Sachs. We buy the treasury bonds for investment. So when the interest rate and value of these treasury bonds drop, so does our investment. And Mary writes, the borrower is a slave to the lender. And this is what it's going to be. And that, oh, how many remember that just before the last election, that commercial of in China where the guy's standing in front of the class of Chinese students saying how United States no longer is such a great nation because of what we have been doing to our debt. They should start playing that commercial again. You know, bring that back. Well, you're listening to Sudden Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ann Ubellis, and the call-in line is open, so please feel free to call as I muddle through today's broadcast. I hope everyone is able to hear me clear enough. Call-in line is 917-889-3675. Excuse me. Now, we were talking about the investors. We have, like I said, investing is by purchasing treasury bills, notes, and bonds. We are the investors on it. Then you have the intergovernment debt, and those are those funds I explained to you earlier, the funds that are government retirement funds, Medicaid and Medicare funds, and Social Security funds that the government has borrowed against. Now, this is your tax dollar being used twice, honestly. And the intergovernment debt uses those temporary surpluses from these retirement funds. Funds are supposed to be in a lockbox, the insurances and public health funds, against the debt. So that's the second one. Then you have the publicly held. These are U.S. individuals like you and I and U.S.-based corporations that invest in the debt because of its security and guaranteed interest returns. So we go out and buy these treasury bonds, you, I, your IRA account, hoping for a good return because of our good credit rating, hoping for a good interest rate against your dollar being invested. And now you see the problem here. You're listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm sorry if I sound a little confused, but I'm looking at my notes here. I started to do, and I just lost something I was looking for. Huh. Oh, well. You're listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm talking about funds held. I'm going to play a little Don Fortney, Risky Assets. Here we go.
My name, and I ain't got a stake in the game. With no amount of cash, no job, and no assets, got an interest-only mortgage in my name. Only in America, we're in the middle of this mess. Who cares about the economy? Think of my success. With no equity in my home, got me a brand new auto loan, and improved my credit score with more indebtedness. Sign me up, oh, sign me up for the golden American dream. I learned in school I'm entitled, and it's my right. Let others do the work, it's beneath my dignity. So give yours, give me mine, hurry up, I'm short on time. In the new America, ain't everything for free. I received a credit card offer in the mail yesterday. It promised 6 full months with no interest from today. I got only 25 so far, Visa, Discover, MasterCard. I ship the balances around and around, and I never have to pay. Well, only in America, where credit is easily. I can't think of a better lending, spending place to be. So put it on and try it, show your card and buy it. I guess that's what is meant by the land of the free. Oh, sign me up, oh, sign me up for the golden American dream. I learned in school I'm entitled, and it's my right. Let others do the work, it's beneath my dignity. Give me yours, give me mine, hurry up, I'm short on time. In the new America, ain't everything for free.
Don Fortney is a local South Carolinian here, living in the area, and he also plays a lot of our Tea Parties. You can find his music up on teapartymusic.webs.com, and it's not expensive. I think it's only $10 or $12. So take a look at his website and buy one of his CDs. Been looking at some news that's been popping up as we're talking. And I want to let you know that the call-in line is open, so please, someone give a call here, and let's have a conversation going. Call-in number is 917-889-3675. Here we are. We're fighting for balanced budget and a new budget and preventing the government shutdown and default. And here's an article that just caught my eye. that was put up today, and Boehner is hailed for bringing potty parity to the House floor. Yep, not party, potty. It seems that the women restroom for congresswomen is about, what would they say, football field length walk across the public hall. And for 4 years, they've been trying to bring the ladies' room closer to the House floor. And Boehner turned around and told the architect to make it happen. So here's your tax dollars at work, bringing the women's room closer to the House floor. And they did it. They did it. Speaker Boehner told the architect of the Capitol to make it happen. So they're achieving potty parity. And they converted the office for the parliamentarian space into a woman's restroom. And the parliamentarian moved across the hall into the speaker's ceremonial office. I guess that's the ceremonial flush. All right. So they're congratulating him for bringing the women's room closer to the House floor. Interesting. Absolutely interesting. Ah, well, it seems that it was based upon a federal complaint in the 90s, arguing the lack of the women's restroom amounted to illegal gender discrimination and violated the constitutional right of equal protection. Well, you know, being a female, yeah, you know, especially females that go through a point in life where it's a little difficult to hold it in. I can imagine trying to run across a football field just to get to the restroom. So this is your tax dollars at work, bringing the restroom closer to the House floor. Why did they move the men's room further away? Now that's a thought. That is a thought. Okay. You're listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. Another thing that caught my eye also is last episode on Friday, I was talking about Fast and Furious and who knew what, when. And Grassley made a comment in an interview just a couple of hours ago wondering whether or not Holder knew about Fast and Furious. And I did play a piece by David Ogden about Fast and Furious. Let me see if I can find it. Just bear with me here. And I got this new studio, and I like the way they do the searches, but I can't always find the search box. Here we go. This is March 29th of 2009 when he announced the Operation Fast and Furious initiation.
The President has directed us to take action to fight these cartels, and Attorney General Holder and I are taking several new and aggressive steps as part of the administration's comprehensive plan. Those steps include the following. DOJ's Drug Enforcement Administration, which already has the largest U.S. drug enforcement presence in Mexico, with 11 offices in that country, is placing 16 new DEA positions in Southwest Border field operations, specifically to target Mexican trafficking and associated violence. The DEA is also deploying 4 new mobile enforcement teams to specifically target Mexican methamphetamine trafficking, both along the border and in U.S. cities impacted by the cartels. DOJ's Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives is increasing its efforts by adding 37 new employees in 3 new offices using $10 million in Recovery Act funds and redeploying 100 personnel to the southwest border in the next 45 days to fortify its Project Gunrunner, which is aimed at disrupting arms trafficking between the United States and Mexico. ATF is doubling its presence in Mexico itself, from 5 to 9 personnel working with the Mexicans specifically to facilitate gun tracing activity, which targets the illegal weapons and their sources in the United States.
Now, that's March 29th, 2009. And according to a congressional report, top brass in the DOJ and the ATF were asked by Steve Martin, the Assistant Director of Intelligence Operations, how long are you going to let this go on, when they said, you are arming the Mexican cartel. In fact, Lenny Brewer, who's head of the criminal division of the DOJ, was told about this in February 27, 2010. So they knew about this all along. And I've said this, it's going to bring down Holder. This will bring down Eric Holder. You're listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio, and Fast and Furious has been heating up, and it's going to be a huge scandal. I'm surprised Grassley doesn't have a copy of this March 29th interview. Maybe he should go over to YouTube and do some of his research. He'll find all the stuff right there on the up on the Internet. Well, we've been talking about the budget and our economy today. I just wanted to throw in there that little update on Fast and Furious because it is heating up fast and furiously. This is an email someone sent me called Entitlements, and I thought it was absolutely funny. And I'm going to read this to you. I don't know who the author is, so I cannot credit it to anyone, but it's an email that's been floating around there. I'd love to know who wrote this, though. It's called Entitlements, and starts off, "Entitlements my ass. I paid cash for my Social Security insurance. Just because they borrowed my money doesn't make my benefits some kind of charity or handout. Congressional benefits like free health care, outrageous retirement packages, 67 paid holidays, 3 weeks paid vacation, unlimited paid 6 days. Now that's welfare, and they have the nerve to call my retirement entitlements? Someone please tell me what the hell is wrong with all the people that run this country. We're broke and can't help our seniors, veterans, orphans, homeless, etc. In recent months, we have provided aid to Haiti, Chile, Pakistan, home to Bin Laden, literally billions of dollars. Our retired seniors living on fixed incomes received no aid, nor do they get any breaks while our government gives hundreds of billions to foreign countries. They call Social Security and Medicare entitlements, even though most of us have been paying for them all our working lives. And now, when it's time for us to collect, the government is running out of money. Why did government borrow from our Social Security in the first place? We have many adoptable children who are shoved aside to make room for the adoption of foreign orphans. America, a country where we have homeless without shelter, children going to bed hungry, elderly going without needed medication, mentally ill going without treatment, etc. Imagine if our government gave us the same support they gave the people who hate us. Sad, isn't it? But 99% of people won't have the guts to forward this. I'm part of the 1% that just did. Well, I forwarded it to everyone here up on Blog Talk Radio. If anyone knows who wrote this one, you know, let me know so we can credit the individual. Because it's true. It is absolutely true. Now, Cut, Cap, and Balance Act of 2010 is they're trying to push this into the Senate, see if we can get it back up on a vote in the Senate. In the interim, there was an announcement a little while ago that there may be some sort of a compromise agreement coming up. What the details are, I don't know. And it changes, the information changes minute to minute, fast and furiously, we should say. So you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Ann Ubellis. Our chat room is open. I welcome you to join us there. And our call-in guest line is also open, which is 917-889-3675. And I welcome you to join us also on the line and call in and have your say. White House holds back on Boehner's debt bill veto. What is going on here now? This one just posted up on the Internet. Okay. What they're saying is Obama did not specifically say he will place a veto should a bill be passed in the House and Senate. So it seems he's looking like a way to cover his hindquarters here. All right. Cut, Cap, and Balance Act, which we'd like to see come back, was sponsored by Jason Chaffetz, Republican out of Utah, Mick Mulvaney, Republican here out of the great state of South Carolina, and Reed Ribble, a Republican out of Wisconsin. And the cut cuts a total of $111 billion in fiscal year 2012. The savings will be divided as following. Reduce non-security discretionary spending below 2008 levels, which saves $76 billion. $35 billion cut to non-veterans, non-Medicare, non-Social Security mandatory spending. And then defense budget at president's level. And then they're going to cap it. The total federal savings is going to be scaled back based upon a glide path for the fiscal years, starting with 2012 at 22.5 of the GDP, all the way up to 2021, where it becomes 19.9 of the GDP. And then they want a balance, requires a passage of the balanced budget amendment before raising the nation's debt limit. And the debt ceiling increase contingent on a balanced budget amendment. Interesting. So we'll see what's going to happen with this one. It would be a $2.4 trillion ceiling increase. Well, we're going to see what's happening. Like I said, you're listening here to Southern Sense, and I hope you're enjoying the afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, His Excellency, the Governor of Texas.
My friends, I want to thank you for that sincere and heartwarming ovation.
No questions, please.
Governor, what do you think of the crisis in the Middle East?
I was saying just this morning at the weekly prayer breakfast in this historic capital that it behooves both the Jews and the Arabs to settle their differences in a Christian manner.
Governor,
we got to
have you seen the evidence of the disgraceful situation at the chicken ranch?
Fellow Texan, I am proudly standing here to humbly see. I assure you, and I mean it. Now who says I don't speak out as plain as day? And fellow Texans, I'm for progress and the flag. Long may it fly. I'm a poor boy, come to greatness. So it follows that I cannot tell a lie.
What the hell did he say?
Same as usual, not same thing.
Ooh, I love to dance a little sidestep. Now they see me, now they don't. I'm bound and bound. Solemn and declare, I'm for goodness and for profit and for living clean and saying daily prayer. And now, my good friend, you can slip like I'll be to you. You can stand tall, you can trust me, for I promise I shall keep a watchful eye upon you.
I hear him talking, but he don't come in.
Ooh, I love to dance a little sidestep. Now they see me, now they don't. And on and ooh, I love to sweep around the white step. A little swap and leave the people on.
There he is. Come on, boy.
Governor, smell the people. Watch your feet.
Why has the chicken ranch operation been so long?
We should be having some acoustic problems in here.
Aren't you afraid of possible payoffs and bribes?
Now this... I'm sorry.
Enough of this pussyfooting, Governor. What do you intend to do about Miss Mona and the chicken range?
Now, Miss Mona, I don't know her. Though I've heard the name, oh yes. But of course I have no close contact. So what she is doing, I can only guess. And now Miss Mona, she's a blemish on the face of that good town. I am taking somewhere's gonna have to close her down.
Can you believe that, man?
Is that a yes or a no?
Possible, maybe.
Ooh, I love
step, cut a little twat and leave the people on. Ooh, I love to step, little tag step.
Okay, that was Charles Durning singing I Love a Little Sidestep from the movie Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. And whenever I hear that song, you know, whenever you think of any politician, think of that song. And Yanni just told me about half an hour ago, President Obama is now saying that he will veto any budget bill coming out of the Republicans. So it's back on again. It's another continuation of the pissing contest between President Obama and Speaker of the House John Boehner. So will he? Won't he? We're going to find out, I guess, in hopefully sometime in the near future. There is a three short laws that Gary North has proposed in returning our country, restoring liberty. And he said the United States should abolish the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 and all subsequent laws relating to the Federal Reserve Act. First, the central bank of the United States would become just one more over-leveraged bank. So instead of having us responsible for its debt, it will be responsible to itself. You know, think about this. Federal Reserve, who's got the biggest holdings in that? Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs. This is, again, the quantitative easing. Instead of buying the Treasury bonds from the Treasury, the Federal Reserve is buying them from Goldman Sachs, which owns the Federal Reserve along with Morgan Stanley. No wonder why that we ended up bailing out those two companies, because if they didn't, the Federal Reserve would probably collapse anyway. So he's saying abolish the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 and let the Federal Reserve become just one more over-leveraged bank. So if it goes bust, it goes bust. Now, members of the board will no longer be paid U.S. government employees. Next thing he said that we should be doing is the deadline for filing all income taxes should be shifted from April 15th. Now, think about this. Stop paying your taxes on April 15th. Instead, you have to pay them the first Monday of November, knowing full well the very next day is the day you're going to go to the polls to vote. So you change the date that you pay your taxes from April 15th to the first Monday in November, and the first Tuesday in November is the day you vote in the presidential elections and your congressional elections and so on and so forth. How many of you, as you write that check to the IRS, are going to remember that come Tuesday morning when you head to the polls and punch that button, pull that lever, poke that chat, whatever you're going to do? How many are going to be voting to have your taxes raised, increased, like President Obama wants to have done right now? Then the third thing he says is abolish the withholding so that when you pay your taxes on that first Monday in November, you're writing the full amount out. That's going to be a huge, huge ouch, absolute ouch. So instead of getting a refund of money that you've already paid, you're going to be paying and paying and paying and paying, and Monday night you're going to be tossing and turning. Come Tuesday morning, you head out to that polling place. You turn around and you say, he wants to increase my taxes, she wants to increase my tax. No, this one wants to reduce, this one wants to cut cap and balance. Hey, I think I'm going to go for that person. Well, here's a song, and I don't know who's performing it, but I thought it was funny. It's called I'll Be Taxing You. It's a Obama parody, and I hope you enjoy it.
Now, while Obama's in France and telling everybody over there, hey, you got to help yourselves, the world ought to help, but you need to fix your corruption and you need to help yourselves. It'd be great to even say that here, but that's not what he's saying here. Here's what he's
saying
here.
Every breath you take, every step you make, I'll be taxing you.
Shanklin, and every cent you make.
Okay, that was, I didn't hear the very end of it. Sorry about that. So it was comedian Paul Shanklin, every cent you make. That was played up on Rush Limbaugh, and I hope you enjoyed that little bit. Our chat room is open. I want to welcome Maverick into the chat room. You're listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. And I do apologize if my show isn't my normal up-to-par aces. I'm a little under the weather today, as you can hear with my voice. Yanni says my voice sounds much sexier. Right now I'm starting to get a really bad sore throat. Call-in line is open, so if someone out there listening would like to get a call in, it's 917-889-3675. And discuss maybe this idea that Gary North has in changing these three short laws, getting rid of the Federal Reserve, so just be one more over-leveraged bank, changing the deadline for filing income taxes from April 15th to the first Monday of November, and abolishing all withholding of all federal taxes. And I think it's an absolutely great idea, because I'm telling you, how many of these politicians out there would be suggesting we raise the tax limits when they know the very next day, after the day you pay your taxes, the next day you're going to be making a vote for them? Boy, can we turn around and really bring the debt ceiling completely down, maybe pay off the entire principal of the debt. Huh, absolutely, absolutely we could do that. Now, we can probably pay off the entire debt if we abolish the entire IRS also and bring on the fair tax. And Maverick writes, income tax is illegal. It's actually unconstitutional, except for the fact they shoved it into the Constitution because they knew it was unconstitutional. The other way they could get income tax is to alter the Constitution. But I'd say get rid of the entire IRS system and all the tax codes and laws and bring the fair tax on. Because that way, not a flat tax, because a flat tax, you actually penalize the poorest. Say, for example, a flat tax is 10% across the board. 10% of $20,000 income is a higher percentage of persons, is a higher amount to pay for that poor person compared to 10% of $2 million. You know, which is easier, for a millionaire to pay 10% of his income or for someone that's at a $20,000 income level paying 10%, $2,000. I know I, for one, am going to have a hard time paying $2,000 in a lump sum for my income taxes, but I don't think a millionaire is going to have a hard time paying $200,000 on his income. And so if we do a fair tax, that person earning $20,000 chooses how much tax they pay. And a millionaire with that $2 million income doesn't care how much he pays in taxes. He knows he can afford it because he's going to see the value and the tax included on the price tag. So if he wants that Mercedes-Benz or if he wants that gold-lined swimming pool, he can afford it or she can afford it. You know, and they'll pay a higher percentage of taxes compared to the person that only earns $20,000. Matter of fact, Jim Jan Radio put up a link for the fair tax in the chat room, which is jimjanradio.com/fairtax.php, and I am a good proponent of the fair tax. I think it's the honest way we should be doing it. You know, barring that, put Gary North's plan into place. Change tax filing day to the first Monday in November, the day before you go to the polls to vote, and abolish all withholding, so on that first Monday in November, the day before you vote, you're going to be writing that check. And then when you go to the polls to vote, you're going to be saying, does this person honestly deserve my vote? Have they done the best with my tax dollars that I'm going to be sending them? Well, that's going to be a very, very good question. You're listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. And here's a funny, we got a caller, and I believe this is Yanni calling in to make a comment. Yes, Yanni.
I didn't want to interrupt anything really important, but I think you should keep that voice, radio chick. when you're ill, you sound a lot better.
Jeez, thanks.
And I just went to pick up the mail, and I think we better raise the debt ceiling.
What's that?
I said, well, I just got the mail, so we might as well raise the debt ceiling because we're going to be in the same position as the government, you know. So.
Oh, we need our household debt ceiling.
It's funny, Annie. Get it?
Oh, okay.
I mean, look, you can be ill, but you can't. Just, you were talking about debt. I overheard you a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So. Yeah, and by the way, anybody that's listening over there, is that it is, honestly, I go from channel to channel on Fox Business and then Fox News and whatever else I pick up. I will not mention their names, but it changes by a half hour. I mean, it's you have no clue to what's going on at all. I mean, there's like, why don't these two fellas, Boehner and Obama, get up on a podium next to each other and discuss it in front of us instead of getting these clips on one side, this side, that side, whatever. Just talk to us like we do understand. And the phones are burning up. Did you see that? They're burning up over it. Every office that's there, they can't even keep up with it because he said yesterday, Obama did, that ordinary people do not understand what the debt ceiling means. And all of a sudden, the lines just lit up like crazy. And there's over 63%, I believe, that understand exactly what the debt ceiling is going to mean to the country. So
right.
Don't make us out stupid, you know. I mean, he doesn't realize that we're not stupid, you know.
Exactly. Now, this is something that someone had written an opinion piece over on the Fox website. I forget his last name. He's a reverend. And he said, why doesn't the Congress extend the debt ceiling for only 13 weeks and in that time period have Obama place an 800-word essay up in publication explaining should the debt ceiling be increased, if so, why, and should the budget be cut?
No, it's a great plan, but he's not going to do it. It's going to be the same thing.
Put in an 800-word explanation,
yeah,
of his reasoning for the budget. Have two other Democrats do that, then have three Republicans do that, then have an open forum debate on the House. You know, have these all published ahead of time so the public can read them and see their position, and then have the public and members of Congress quiz these six people and come up with
a
budget that way.
No, it's a great. I agree with that idea. The only thing is that what it really bothers me is you can have all these primaries and everything else, and people just talk back and forth. They're like in the whatever the Democratic or the Republican primaries, that everybody talks to each other. Why can't have the ones that are main players in this thing get up there and talk to each other in front of us? Give us that hour, you know.
Take it from behind the closed doors and bring it to the public.
Bring it to the public. Come on, man. You know, get up there and say your piece and see, and without teleprompters, say your piece and say it the way it is. Why are you talking behind closed doors? You know, it's crazy. It's like me yelling at you from the bathroom while you're in the kitchen, you know? So, no, I'm serious, Annie. I mean, it's just so silly. I don't know what your listeners are, your opinions are over there, but it makes sense to me. And I'm getting tired of surfing over here. And I just want to tell you, because I'm looking at the clock, and you're just about to go off. Don't forget to mention what we talked about yesterday at Factory Creek about in the future they might be setting up an aquarium. I thought we were going to plug that one.
Oh, all right, yeah.
For the local customers or even tourists, that'd be great. But they have a great plan. I mean, I think we should push that one for the end of the show.
One of the places.
All right, let me get off so you can continue with the series.
Why don't you shut up?
See, now you feel better, don't you?
Oh, I wish I did.
See, because we're not in the same room. That's why.
Bye, dear.
Bye, dear. Hey.
Okay, you've been listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. That was Yanni, my co-host. And just a reminder here, if you ever do visit the Beaufort, South Carolina area, one of our favorite places to be is Factory Creek Bar and Restaurant here on Ladies Island in the Beaufort just across the bridge from the city of Beaufort. And they're going to be putting up an aquarium that's going to have local species in it so that when you come here, you'll actually see what is in the water as you're sitting there watching the Beaufort River, eating your meal. It's an absolutely excellent, beautiful view. The food is phenomenal. And I do welcome you to come down here to visit Beaufort, especially the weekend of September 16th. We're going to have a Lieutenant Dan weekend to benefit the wounded warriors from Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's hosted by the Independence Fund. And you can find out more about that by going to independencefund.org. And if you can't make it, you know, make a small donation. Even $5 helps them. It helps our wounded warriors get back their independence in their lives and enjoy society as a whole person. It aids them with devices to help them get around, helps them in their homes to be a little bit more independent, as well as with psychological services for them. I want to thank you for listening to us on Blog Talk Radio. I will be back on Friday the 29th. We are planning to do a Piss and Moan episode tomorrow. I hope I'm going to be up to doing that. I'll put that up on the show page later on. So Piss and Moan is always fun. That's where you call in and piss and moan about anything and everything. And we always have a really good blast. Yanni and I do that because he just loves pissing and moaning about this and that. Trust me, I live with him. I got to hear it every day. So until Friday, tomorrow, I'm sorry, Piss and Moan should probably be around 7 o'clock tomorrow. I'll have that up later on. So that also, Piss and Moan tomorrow, and then on Friday, once again, we'll be back with Southern Sense. Have a good evening.
Turn out the lights. The party's over. They say that all good things must end. Call it a night. The party's over. And tomorrow starts the same old thing again.